Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Clinical child psychologist and our regular parenting expert, Dr. David Coleman, joins me now. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Claire. How are you doing?
I'm very well, and we're inviting questions for you as always. We have plenty in already, but if anyone would like to get in touch, 51551 or email todaycb@rte.ie. And if we don't get to deal with it today, David, we'll always come back to those questions. Let's start with this one. This is about a secondary school student. This is an unusual one. Our son's in third year in secondary school. He has a lovely girlfriend of the same age since last November, but students mostly from his class are making derogatory comments about his girlfriend and my son. At one stage, he said it was relentless and he was the running joke in school. I intervened, unknown to him, because he begged me not to, with the school. They spoke to him, or the parents spoke to him, and subsequently the class was addressed. Now, it has eased off since then, but it's still happening to a lesser degree. We know it's stressing him, even though he said he can handle it. They're passing derogatory comments about his looks now, and he's a quiet person. He can usually stand up for himself, but this is a whole group of people he's dealing with, not just one or two. What can we do? What's your advice there, David?
Yeah, what a difficult situation. I mean, I think he definitely seems like he's been ostracized within his class, and that he's become the real scapegoat within the group, that everybody, it seems like, is having a go at him, which is a very difficult situation to be in. I mean, typically, if you are if you're being mocked by other people, I mean, the ideal is that we try and give a neutral but assertive response. So typically you have to show the person, look, I hear what you're saying. So you say back to them, look, you know, you're calling me short, say, for example, you know, that was the mock or the tease, you know, or you're calling me ugly. I don't really care what you say or what you think. And so what that does is it shows the person, look, I've heard the slag that you're throwing my way, but I'm not getting myself wound up about it. I'm not bothered by it one way or another. Now, you know, to be able to do that kind of assertive responding is difficult. Sometimes we have to fake it, in as much as we might actually be really hurt by what's been said. We might be very upset by it. And yet we have to show that we're not bothered by it, because typically in those kinds of mocking situations, part of what keeps the people who are doing the bullying active is that they feel that they're getting a response, you know, that it's having an impact, that it's upsetting the person, or that it's leading the other person to overreact and to become either really angry or to start slagging back. So you need to give this kind of neutral response in most situations, but it's very difficult if he's suffering that from everybody, whatever about there being one or two people in the class. I think it might be, given that the parents have already gone to the school and done so behind his back and he's not yet aware of that, it might be worth their while continuing to have another discussion with the school and to say, look, you know, it has improved, it still seems like it's difficult. And then I suppose all they can do beyond that is to support their son and to say, look, you know, we think you're absolutely fantastic, you know, and give him all the positive feedback that he needs to try to counteract. I mean, you know, in most situations, most young people would say, oh, well, you have to say that, you're my mom or you're my dad. And yet I think it's still useful for parents to say it. Mm-hmm. So he has to get some kind of positive feedback so that he doesn't necessarily take it all to heart and doesn't start to believe the hype, because that's what typically happens, is that any young person, they're bound to feel overwhelmed and to feel like, well, you know, if everybody's saying this, there must be some element of truth to it.
Now, here's one of your favourite topics, David: access to mobile phones and social media. And this one is from this person who says, our 12-year-old daughter's in sixth class. She's the only one out of a class of 18 without a phone and without social media. My husband and I think she's too young. We have regular open conversations about the pros and cons and have told her that she'll get this when the time is right. She's a very well-behaved girl and she probably feels very unfairly treated deep down. It's affecting her because she doesn't get invited to meet up at weekends because she's not available to receive messages via Snapchat and WhatsApp, which is how the kids communicate with each other. We've had many tears and she's very hurt. Of course, there are other ways for the classmates to invite her, but it doesn't happen. The girls all get on well with her. They play sport together. They've come to our house for a birthday party, but I have noticed when the group meet outside of these settings, it's all phone-based activity. Now, David, there's a dilemma for you, because that family have made a decision, sixth class, age 12, too young to have a phone, but the social group is moving on.
it is a very difficult situation. I mean, it's ironic. So some of the kind of surveys and research that's been done here in Ireland have suggested that age 12 is the average age for children to receive their first phone. But in fact, there are two studies, one of which was the Irish National Advisory Council for Online Safety, a bit of a mouthful, but they did a survey last year and they found that 40% of nine-year-olds had mobile phones, had smartphones.
40% of nine-year-olds?
Yeah, and that 25% of nine-year-olds are on social media of different kinds, which is shocking to my mind and really dangerous. But, you know, I think the proof of this being the downward trajectory in terms of the age profile of children getting phones is absolutely evident then for this girl, because she's the only one now, you know, and there are many children who say, oh, I'm the only one. And mostly parents go, oh, I don't really believe you that you're the only one. I know there are other parents who haven't given their children phones, but in this case, she actually is the only one. I think also then because of that, these parents might need to look at the decisions that they're making about when she's going to be, I suppose, of an age or going to need a mobile phone. Because typically by the time young people get into secondary school, they do need a mobile phone. Because again, some of the data says that 97% of 13-year-olds will have mobile phones, will have their own smartphone. If 97 is, that's practically everybody. And so if that's the case, then, you know, they're seeing the evidence that their daughter is becoming a little bit socially excluded simply because she's not up to speed with the different arrangements that are getting made. And I guess that's perhaps a reason for the parents in this instance to really change and to think, okay, we had hoped to hold out, for example, till she started in first year in secondary school, but now with about a month to go, maybe it's time for her to have a mobile phone so that at least she can maintain the social connections that she has with her sixth class friends, some of whom probably will be going on to secondary school with her. And it'll be good to make sure that over the course of the summer as well, that she's not going to be left out or isolated. And it'll be even more difficult then because she won't actually be physically in school with these girls and boys.
Mm-hmm. So but then you see, you made that decision and that's fine. You give in a little earlier than you'd wanted to, but you've got the social media. And I spent some time on TikTok at the weekend. And I was looking at flicking through, spending forever. And it's all very interesting and good fun. But there's a lot of unsuitable content on there that I certainly wouldn't want my almost nine-year-old to look at. And these parents of the 12-year-old probably don't want her to see it either.
Yeah, and it is so difficult. And that's why we really have to think then about when we give our children a mobile phone, what are the rules that we're going to put in place? And certainly one of the things that I would suggest whenever you first give your child a mobile phone, one of the core rules that you have to have is that you have to have full access to every aspect of their phone. So every app that they have downloaded, you need to have the passwords to be able to access that app independently of them. The same with just the simple access to the phone itself. Whether that be through fingerprint reading or facial recognition or whatever it is now on phones, God forbid you put in an old numerical passcode, but whatever is the way to access the phone, you need to have that access as a parent. And so your child starts off with the awareness that you have full monitoring capacity of everything that they do online. And they might feel that's very, oh my God, big brother watching over me, and it's very difficult, but actually it does help protect them in the early stages. It also allows you to begin to see what it is that they are being exposed to, perhaps, you know, without their decision to be exposed to some of the stuff, which means you can then contextualize some of what they're seeing. And you can also continue to give them really good advice and guidance about how they use their phone, how they respond to people on their social media and all that kind of stuff. And then only after time passes, as they become a little bit more mature and a little bit more responsible in how they're using their phone, and you're confident that they are better able to manage it, then you can begin to extend out their privacy. And give them more privacy and have it that you will, you know, that you won't, for example, randomly check the phone, that you'll always ask them to check the phone and be with them. And that way, then they know that you're not kind of snooping in the background at some point. But I think, you know, start off as you, you know, start off with a lot of supervision, a lot of monitoring, and then over time, perhaps ease it off. I think if you give them too much flexibility and privacy at the start, I think they can get into really dangerous situations.
Okay, let's go to this one now, which is just come into us. My son is 9 years old and gets very anxious about being left alone at bedtime. About 6 weeks ago, I left him in the car while I was paying for petrol and the car alarm went off. I didn't hear it. He was very upset when I came back because he couldn't get out because the car locked automatically. We're reassuring him, but should he talk to someone?
No, not necessarily, I guess, because it's a relatively recent thing. But what I would talk to him about again is that whole experience of being locked in the car, and I wouldn't be overly reassuring him. That's not to say that you don't reassure him, but what I think you need to focus on more than reassurance that this won't happen again is to talk about how distressing it was for him, how upsetting, how frightening it was for him for that period of time, and then begin to talk about maybe things that he did do that were actually the right thing to do. So, for example, he ultimately stayed calm enough that he didn't start trying to break the car doors or break a window. He just waited until, you know, he knew you'd come back, and you did come back. And when you came back, you managed to sort everything out. And so it was a very distressing time, but he managed to get through it, because I think that's what he might be missing in terms of his sense of self-efficacy, which is that he couldn't do anything about it, when in fact he did actually quite a lot of right things, if we use that expression. That right. then, I think, is what's been, you know, coming out in terms of the sleep at night. And so he's just okay. got that little bit of extra anxiety at night.
David, we've got to leave it there. Thank you very much.
Problem.
And if you've questions for Dr. David Coleman, do email us todaycb@rte.ie. But that's just about all we have time for today. Thank you for listening. Today's programme was produced by Niamh Lyons, research by Ciarán Dunn. Our broadcast coordinator is Louise Kerr-Ross. Liam Mullen was on sound. And I hope you'll join me on TV tonight for Clare Byrne Live. We'll be hearing from a woman who was scammed out of €2,500 in a matter of minutes when she tried to change her credit card. And with car hire and accommodation prices soaring, we'll have a great guide to cutting those holiday costs. That's RTE One at 10:35 tonight. Now, though, it's over to Shea Byrne.
Thank you very much, Claire. We'll all be watching.